Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Craig Unger, the author of American Armageddon, The Fall of the House of Bush, and the New York Times bestseller House of Bush, House of Saud, the former deputy editor of the New York Observer and editor-chief of Boston Magazine. He has written about George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush for The New Yorker, Esquire, and Vanity Fair, where he is a contributing editor. His new book, just out, is Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. Welcome to Background Briefing, Craig Unger.
Thanks for having me, Ian.
And Craig, your new book, I think, is vital reading for any American who cares about their democracy. And clearly we're in a time where our democracy, its very foundations are open to question, because Democrats who voted and who are eligible to vote, who want to vote Democrat, are now being expected to prove who they are. Meanwhile, a handful of billionaires that are buying the election for the Republicans don't have to reveal who they are. So the whole playing field is completely askew, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I think Karl Rove plays a really vital role in this. A lot of people wrote him off after 2008, and he sort of left the Bush administration in disgrace, and the Bush left with a 22% approval rating. But Rove has come back as king of the super PACs, and as a result, he presides over an empire that has roughly $1 billion to spend in the upcoming election.
And it seems that people who, particularly on the left, those that listen to Pacifica, have this idea that there's no difference between the two parties, even though what happened in 2000 in Florida perhaps should have indicated that there was a difference. We wouldn't have had the Iraq War, etc., had the guy that actually won, Gore, in spite of his failures, been able to, had the vote been properly counted. So if that didn't prove that every vote counts, I don't think what could prove any more that every vote counts is the fact that Karl Rove is trying to take your vote away. So if you don't think your vote's valuable, he sure as hell thinks your vote is valuable. That's why he wants to suppress it.
Right. I couldn't agree more. And one of the reasons I focus on Rove is if you look at the United States Supreme Court, partly as a result of presidential elections, no person has benefited from the Supreme Court more than Karl Rove. In 2000, of course, the Supreme Court in Bush v. Gore effectively decided who was president of the United States and made it Rove's candidate. And then again in 2010, in the Citizens United decision, again in a very controversial, highly partisan 5-4 vote, they decided that billionaires could effectively buy the elections. And Karl Rove, immediately after Citizens United, Karl Rove had a luncheon at his house with about 24 power brokers, and the super PAC was born, American Crossroads and Crossroads GPS. And he started coordinating literally hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars.
And Crossroads GPS and other super PACs that are 501c4s, allegedly in the name of social welfare, that's how the IRS categorizes them, those that donate do not have to reveal who they are, and you can create these vehicles overnight, and you can dissolve them after the elections. So they are incredibly, you know, ephemeral vehicles, if you will, yet they have the power of anonymity. And I just find it extraordinary, because what is quite clear here is that we don't know how much money corporate America is pouring into these Crossroads GPS 501c4s, because they're concerned about half their customers are Democrats and half their customers are Republican. And even though they would probably prefer to vote Republican, they're restrained from doing it publicly. But privately and anonymously, isn't there a likelihood there's a lot of corporate money pouring into the Republican coffers?
Well, absolutely. And you have these big billionaires like Bob Perry is a Texas billionaire. Harold Simmons is another Texas billionaire who's been with Rove for really roughly 30 years. And if you look back and to how Rove got his start in Texas in the 80s, he started political action committees that were supportive of tort reform, and effectively they saved A lot of companies, such as big pharmaceutical companies, tobacco companies, they save them billions and billions of dollars in product liability cases in return for money that was contributed to these political action committees.
Again, I'm speaking with Craig Unger, the author of the brand new book, Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom. And this book is a vital reading, particularly at this moment in time where we're only weeks away from an election that Karl Rove singularly, because of his power and influence, is both trying to buy and trying to steal. And he did, in many ways, steal the 2004 election, which is made very, very clear in this book, Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power, by the multiple means that you just mentioned, Craig Unger, the various tricks of the trade. But, of course, key to the ability to do this was this secret program that he was running through a company called Smart Tech that was headed up by a fellow called Mike Connell. And walk us through that whole process all the way up to Mike Connell's death. Mike Connell was the only person who really had the goods on Karl Rove. And when he died in a plane crash, his sister Shannon said his death would have been a really nice Christmas present for Karl Rove. But let's go back to election night itself in 2004. In the state of Ohio, we know that Obama has to win the state of Ohio, so does Romney. It is the key state. And the exit polls put John Kerry, what, 3 or 4 points ahead? And
it
yet
4.2%.
4.2.
Ahead, yes.
So let's start with the key moment at 11:15 on election night.
Right. You know, one of the amazing things about Ohio, one of the amazing things about American election law is the Secretary of State is in each state is in charge of overseeing fair and impartial elections. But in this case, and it was the same in Florida in 2000, the Republican Secretary of State, Ken Blackwell, was co-chairman of the Bush-Cheney campaign. And he gave out a contract as such to help, because he felt the Secretary of State's computer systems were not robust enough to handle all the queries for election night. So he gave out a contract to another company called Smart Tech. And this is what is so controversial, because Smart Tech was a highly, highly partisan Republican tech company. And I asked Karl Rove about it in person when I met him in Ohio. He said he'd never heard of Smart Tech. I frankly am not sure whether to believe him because his own emails were on Smart Tech computers. George W. Bush 43.com was on Smart Tech computers. The Republican National Committee's websites were on Smart Tech's computer. So were Swift Boat Veterans for Truth. Almost every right-wing group you can think of was on Smart Tech's computers, and they were in charge of helping out the Secretary of State in Ohio on election night. And what happened at 11:14 was, as the night had been wearing on, the returns came in, and increasingly it looked like it was going to be Florida and Ohio. Whoever won those states would be the next president. And around 11 o'clock, Florida was called for George Bush, and that meant everything depended on Ohio. So suddenly, millions of people started logging on the Secretary of State's computers for Ohio to figure out what the returns were coming in. And their traffic shot up 700% in a matter of minutes, which meant at exactly 11:14 p.m., the failover site, which was run by Smart Tech, kicked in. And suddenly, the results that were being displayed were controlled not just by the Secretary of State's office in Columbus, but also by Smart Tech's computers in Chattanooga, Tennessee. Computers which were run by a company that was highly, highly partisan. I took the county results as they came in, and I gave them to a couple of people who had studied the results in Ohio very, very clearly. They spent years investigating it. And they looked at the 10 counties that came in just before 11:14, and they said, well, And I didn't tell them when they came in, by the way. And they said, well, these 10 counties seem clean. It doesn't seem like anyone was messing with these results. And then I gave them the 14 counties that came in immediately after that, 11:14 p.m., and they said, well, all these are screwed up, and they were filled with anomalies. And again, every single anomaly favored George Bush and Dick Cheney. So there's just an extraordinary, you know, it's hard to believe all of that is a coincidence. What I found as I began to investigate, too, is that again and again, all the key evidence disappeared, and there were civil suits filed to investigate this. The courts had, by court order, all ballots in the presidential race were to be impounded, and yet millions of ballots were destroyed, and that was never explained. I talked to Jennifer Bruner, who was the next, who succeeded, a Democrat who succeeded Ken Blackwell as Secretary of State, and who vowed to investigate whether there was fraud in Ohio in 2004. And a few weeks before she officially took office, she went by her new office unexpectedly, unannounced, and she walked in and she saw Ken Blackwell's staff, the Republican Secretary of State and his staff, were shredding thousands and thousands of documents. And finally, there was, as I say, a civil suit about all this. And the key figure in this was, as you mentioned, a man named Mike Connell. And his company had helped design this failover site that worked with Smart Tech. He has been described as Karl Rove's cyber guru. He had worked on all the Bush sites, on George W. Bush's sites, on Jeb Bush's sites. He'd worked with Rove on many, many different elections. And he was deposed once. He was a little reticent about his testimony, and he was supposed was being deposed a second time. And but just before that happened, on December 19th, 2008, he had a private plane, and he went up in his private plane and crashed and was killed and has not been heard from again.
But my understanding, Craig Unger, and you obviously talked to Mike Connell's sister and Shannon and his wife, hadn't he undergone a kind of, I wouldn't say a conversion so much as pangs of conscience had visited him, and he was apparently disgusted with the political machinations, and that he was a kind of decent sort of Midwestern farm boy and was having second thoughts about what he'd done.
Well, that's quite possible. I talked to three key people. As you say, I talked to Connell's sister, I talked to his wife, and I also talked to a friend of his named Stephen Spoonamore, who was another cybersecurity expert. And Spoonamore makes that case very strongly. Connell's wife does disagree and doesn't says she's takes issue with Spoonamore, and frankly, it's one of these cases where you have conflicting testimony. But Spoonamore was a Republican himself. He worked for Rudy Giuliani. He was sort of a John McCain Republican, and he felt there was an enormous amount of fraud and sort of cyber warfare going on in the Republican Party in terms of electronic fraud in the elections. And he's one of the people, and I talked to him at great length about what happened in Ohio, and he believes there was what he calls a man-in-the-middle attack in which Smart Tech interfered with the election results. And in Boss Rove, I go into that in great length. Connell's sister is a woman named Shannon Connell, and she was not that close to his brother, but she felt he may have been undergoing a bit of a shift. And Connell's wife, however, disagrees and is less, sort of thinks his death was an accident. I myself found it very hard. It's very difficult to investigate a plane crash, and there was a National Traffic Safety Board investigation, which suggested that the plane may have been gone down by an accident because of icing. Whether that's true or not, I think the answer is simply inconclusive. And the final word I really gave to Shannon, Mike Connell's sister, and she sort of said, look, there are only two possibilities. It was either an accident or it was murder. And if it was an accident, Karl Rove is one of the luckiest men in the world.
But is that to suggest that Mike Connell had the smoking gun in terms of Karl Rove? And was there any indication that Karl Rove, who has, obviously been a genius at covering his rear end, as we saw with the Valerie Plame thing, how vulnerable was he to what Mike Connell knew?
Well, I can't really speak to what Mike Connell absolutely knew, and it's possible he was highly knowledgeable. It's also possible that he was not. But Rove has been brilliant at doing operations with no fingerprints, and what I try to show in this in Boss Rove is how does he work, and he's a master of putting together unseen mechanisms of power. I talked to Larry Johnson, who was a former CIA agent, who could only sort of say wistfully with admiration, look, at the CIA we could have learned an awful lot from Karl Rove. And if you look at a company like Smarttech, Rove says he's never heard of it, and when I looked into who was behind it? I went through one a long Byzantine series of companies that and ownership changes, and finally I traced it back, and I found that the original money came from two very wealthy Republicans, Mercer Reynolds and Bill DeWitt. And Mercer Reynolds had been finance chairman of the Republican Party in 2004 and raised about $240 million for Bush and Cheney. And Reynolds and DeWitt had both bailed out George W. Bush in his oil ventures. So they were very, very close to Rove and to Bush. And I talked to Rove about them, and he acknowledged that he knew Mercer Reynolds quite well. So there I think you have the pedigree of this company and the fact that it was serving Swift Boat for Veterans for Truth, which again Rove says he has nothing to do with. But these mechanisms surface in every single race that Rove runs. There's political action committees that take out ads that are supposedly not coordinated, but they hit up they have vicious attack ads against the Republican candidate. You have what are known as push polls. Push polls are backed by, again, an independent group that can't be traced to Rove, and they hire university students who start asking poses if they're pollsters, and they say, they make phone calls, are you registered to vote? What party are you affiliated? Does it bother you that the Democrat is a lesbian? The Democrat is said to be a pedophile. That John McCain is said to have fathered a baby with an African-American prostitute. And these rumors have been going out in one race after another, in which Karl Rove has a candidate, and I think you're going to see it again in 2012.
Well, just in closing, the fact that we're talking about 2004 election and how much Karl Rove behind the scenes was able to get a victory for his boss, the boss's boss, George W. Bush, and it just gives you chills about what's happening now with this key state of Ohio and the extent to which Karl Rove, as you've mentioned, has been saying not to believe the polls, that Romney's still got a good shot at it. If they are to pull off the same stunts they did in 2004, and presumably on a bigger scale because they have more money and they're more obviously sophisticated since then, it's going to be a hell of a thing, isn't it?
I have to say, the raise, my feeling is they're capable of doing this kind of thing when it's close. But it has to be reasonably close, or it's otherwise just not believable.
Right.
And this race is at that point where, I forget the exact number, but I believe Obama had a 9 or 10 point lead, in, according to some polls in Ohio. And that's a pretty big lead. So you'd have to suspend a lot of belief if it were to shift dramatically in Romney's favor.
By the way, Craig, Bill Clinton refutes that notion that he thinks that the polls tell you one thing, but there is no real reading on turnout. And we know that the Republicans are fired up, but we don't know that the Democrats are fired up. And you know, of course, Samuel Jackson has got this video out telling people to wake the F up, you know. So there is that factor, isn't there? There is.
And you know, when I see the polls and I learn about voter suppression Obama has a comfortable lead in Pennsylvania, but if those voter ID laws go into effect, it could disenfranchise as many as 800,000 people in Pennsylvania. Well, are they included in the polls? I don't know the answer to that question.
Well, again, your book just out, Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power, Craig Unger. It's so important to understand who this guy is and how the extraordinary power he has and how much he is determined to affect our lives. He already has. He's already, in many ways, responsible or at least helped Bush get his second term by fair means or foul, and will do whatever he can to have Romney elected in 2012. But what makes him tick? The idea that his hero is Mark Hanna and McKinley, the candidate of the plutocrats in the last Gilded Age. I just don't understand how a human being living in an American democracy could worship power and privilege. I mean, imagine there are a lot of people like that. They're just so alien to me. I'm just trying to understand what makes this guy tick.
Right. Well, I think part of it, that when he talks about Mark Hanna, it's partly that strategically he helped usher in an era of Republican domination, and he saw it as a historic realignment of the electorate. And Rove has tried to position himself as doing that for this era, and creating what he calls a permanent Republican majority. Now, in fact, things have turned out very, very differently for him. And in 08, all those dreams were dashed completely. The Democrats won the trifecta. They won the House, the Senate, the White House. Rove's boss, of whom he was the architect of his administration, George W. Bush, left the White House with a 22% approval rating, the lowest in history. So now Rove is faced with building this permanent Republican majority. But in fact, in demographic terms, the growth of the Hispanic population strongly, strongly favors the Democrats in coming years. And that's why you see them having to resort to very desperate measures like voter suppression, all these voter ID laws. And we're going to see a lot of that happening now. I think people are starting to wake up to it a bit. Rove had started it in 04, and he had associates. A guy named Mark Hearn went out and filed 65 lawsuits all over the country trying to get voter IDs required and so forth, and to make registration very difficult. This is the return of Jim Crow in many ways. People are calling it Jim Crow 2.0, or in some cases Juan Crow, because it's directed in part at Hispanics. But it could really reshape the electorate. And to me, it's on its face, it's profoundly undemocratic. It's saying, we don't want you guys to vote. What could be more undemocratic than that?
Well, that's the point that I'm trying to make to people here on the American left, or at least the far left, who honestly believe there's no difference between the two and that they're all owned by the rich and powerful, all of which is true, but there are degrees of difference that are quite critical. And if you think your vote doesn't count, well, Karl Rove sure as hell thinks your vote counts. That's why he's desperately trying to suppress it. And he may even be able to pull it off for a second time in 2012. Well, Craig Unger, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Well, thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
Again, I've been speaking with Craig Unger, the author of American Armageddon, The Fall of the House of Bush, and the New York Times bestseller House of Bush, House of Saud. He's the former deputy editor of the New York Observer and editor-in-chief of Boston Magazine, and he's written about George H.W. Bush and George W. Bush for The New Yorker, Esquire, and Vanity Fair, where he is a contributing editor. His new book, just out, is Boss Rove, Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon and assistant producer Tariq Mohammed. This program is available for streaming and podcasting at ianmasters.com, where we welcome your comments, and the conversation continues online at facebook.com/ianmastersmedia. I'll be back again tomorrow with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.